Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky,
host of the Orlando Lakers blog,
coming to you on Tuesday. The Lakers have
officially, October 1st.
Lakers have officially opened up training camp. A lot to talk about there. Breaking Bad is over, and we will cover that, Andy, in our ACK segment.
ACK!
Lots of good questions coming up there. Some position battles. We'll talk about that. There's basketball, Andy.
There's not much,
but there's still basketball to talk about.
No longer pulling stuff out of our ass to do these podcasts.
Nope.
Just our opinions, but no longer topics.
Yep. That stuff's totally organic now. It's great.
Ass free.
All right. But all that, Andy, upcoming. But first, let's go to some NBA headlines. LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony both say they will not be talking about 2014. They mean specifically the summer of 2014, not the year.
Yeah, when January 1st rolls around, both of those guys will acknowledge that the calendar year has advanced.
Sure. Exactly, but they will not talk about the off-season until the off-season.
The summer of 2014 you're referring to, Brian.
Yes, it's verboten until then. Obviously, Andy, this will not stop people from talking about it, certainly not locally, nor will it stop, air quotes, sources from talking about it. It's not like nobody's ever going to discuss where these guys might end up or what their summer plans might be, but the two of them will not be talking about it. LeBron, in particular, I think, learning some lessons from the last time he went through this process.
Well, and also, too, the lessons that he saw from what Melo went through when he eventually ended up going to New York, what he saw Dwight Howard go through. And it's always funny, too, when you see these guys go further and further from the decision and, you know, the debacle that special was, but also, too, the way I think LeBron, regrettably, in hindsight, spent too much time teasing where he might be going.
Right, I wouldn't mind playing there and all that stuff.
Actively fueling speculation. I think he's come to realize that can really only come to bite him in the ass. And when you're looking to try to get a third straight championship, and when you're in the place that LeBron's in right now, you don't need that.
Right.
I mean, you're above that.
And both guys have also said that they're comfortable where they are. And, you know, I think odds are, and I know Stephen A. Smith was saying earlier in the summer that Carmelo Anthony is 50-50 gone, or he's coming to the Lakers and all these other things. I'd be surprised. I think something has to happen for LeBron to leave Miami. Something, and I'm not even talking about them not winning a title this year, because I actually think there's a very good chance Miami doesn't get to the finals this year. I think for the first time in 3 or 4 years, Andy, or whatever, since they put that team together, I'm not going to pick them to get to the finals, because it is so hard historically to get there 4 years in a row. I mean something bigger than that, some sort of falling out between him and Wade, something that doesn't work right, where you can't...
Chris Bosh declares it his team?
Something, but where something happens where
Greg
you can't
Oden
see
declares
them.
It his team?
That would be neat. And in Melo's case, you know, again...
Who was the number one overall pick? Who was more recently the number one overall? I got dibs.
So, overall,
it's just smart. It's just smart of both of these guys. You know, like you said, there will be leaks, there will be sources, but nothing gets more weight than seeing those guys shut down the questions altogether. And, you know, what matters most is what comes out of their mouth or what can be parsed, you know, what coding they may put out there. It sounds like both of them are trying to put very little, if nothing. Next, Brian, speaking of the 2014 summer and contracts and whatnot, David Aldridge, among others, reporting that Greg Monroe, the Pistons' big man, is unlikely to get an extension before this summer, so he could be entering the sweepstakes of 2014 as a restricted free agent.
Yes, the Pistons are apparently, by reports, going to let the market set Monroe's value. They have, obviously, they've given a bucket of money to Josh Smith. They also have Andre Drummond, who is looking really good, and there's some redundancy between Drummond and Monroe. Monroe's a good player, though.
Yes,
and,
he is.
You know, this is one of those things where a team, and now when people start talking about who the Lakers can go get, you know, there's Melo maybe, and there's a lot of older players, Dwayne Wade, people like that. here's somebody who's young and would have some appeal, but when you're talking about restricted free agents, now you're getting into that territory where you probably have to overpay to get a guy because Detroit can match.
But at the same time, though, you're talking about overpaying a player that's actually really good as opposed to overpaying like a B-plus type player. Greg Monroe has a lot
of
potential.
He's a good player.
And he would fit.
What is he still, like 23?
He's like 23 years old, 24 at the oldest, I think. And he's somebody that would fit the Lakers' needs. Plus, I kind of...
Their needs for good young players.
Sure, and you know...
It's a very specific
need. It
would
be a potentially realistic way to go out and get it. And I kind of want it to happen because, as you recall, a couple months ago, Greg Monroe was a guy that I brought up as somebody to keep their eye on for exactly this reason.
Yep.
So I want to look smart.
So go out there and get your Monroe jerseys printed up now. You might as well. Next headline, Andy. Andrew Bynum shows up at Cavaliers training camp and his hair looked totally normal.
Quote Warren Zevon, his hair was perfect.
That sucks.
It sucks.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Andy, how disappointing is this development?
2 billion. This is the most, seriously, this is the most disappointing, dare I say, catastrophic development of the 2014 season, hands down. I don't care what happens after this. This is the worst possible thing. Andrew Bynum's hairstyle, while a semi-member of the Philadelphia 76ers, was one of the greatest things I'd ever seen when you had the fro, the half fro, the braids half fro, just the slick back kind of like...
I don't know what that was. I'm not as two white guys.
Like
I'm really nervous about even trying to find the right term.
Frederick Douglass look.
It was kind of, but
Frederick Douglass, Lord Darkhelmet type thing.
Does that have a name?
I don't know. So many different possibilities that Bynum had with that wild hair. Why do you limit yourself?
There's just so much I don't know about ethnic hair.
You should have seen that Chris Rock documentary.
I just don't know.
The NBA competition committee, Brian, has voted to return the finals to a 2-2-1-1-1 format. We don't know if that's going to be for this upcoming 2014 finals or maybe 2015, but we do know that that's how they vote, and it sounds like it's going to be at some point the format moving forward.
Yeah, generally speaking, it goes to the wider ownership. It has to be approved and all that, but... it's been, what, like 30 years or 20-something years since...
It's my understanding that basically the 2-3-2 was created because with everything being Lakers-Celtics going cross-country...
Right, there was travel and logistical issues.
Right. This was the way they're trying to offset it, but both of us agree this is such a great development.
It's a really bad setup. 2-2-1-1-1 is a much more fair way so that, you know, if you... You know, it's a better accurate representation of, like... Of that home court thing. It's like you're not going out and one team doesn't have to play three straight games on another team's floor. You know, you're not risking if you lose, if you are the team that's earned home court advantage, you're not risking going to, if you split at home, all of a sudden, you know, you're almost guaranteed to come back to your place, you know, down 3-2.
Right. And look, it can be overcome. We saw it with the Lakers in 2010.
No question.
Saw it with the Heat most recently, but that doesn't mean that it's fair.
It's not the right way to do it.
It's the wrong way.
The NBA was the only sport that did it this way. And there, you know, there's travel in hockey, there's travel in baseball. Obviously, football doesn't apply. You know, it can be done. And so it's good to see the NBA doing it that way. All right, so those are your headlines. The Lakers, Andy, opened camp on Saturday with a little less fanfare, earlier than everybody else because they're taking that big trip to China. A lot less fanfare. I mean, there was a good crowd there. I'm sure if you are used
good
to
crowd,
covering...
Not a great crowd. Good crowd.
I'm sure if you're used to covering Media Day in Milwaukee, you would walk into the gym in El Segundo and say, wow, there are a lot of people here today. But by Lakers standards, it was a pretty light crowd. And... It was pretty light on drama. We all know that Kobe isn't going to be playing. We all saw that he was walking normally, and you know he didn't have a cane, which was a good sign. But if he did, I bet he'd have a jaunty cane.
He would. Maybe like a glass cane, like Sam Jackson in Unbreakable.
With a goldfish on the top. That would be cool.
Or like a cane with goldfish swimming inside.
That's what I'm saying. Something like that, like a big ball of goldfish on top.
Okay, I thought for a second you meant like a goldfish-shaped handle, which, while kind of cool, I wouldn't understand.
No, real goldfish.
Okay.
It just wasn't a whole lot of there, which for, you know, in some ways, is kind of nice. I mean, people answered some questions about Dwight, and they did that and whatever. And there were donuts, which was good. He's gone.
Okay.
And pizza was provided for the media after. There was pizza.
I'm kind of pissed sponsored, that I missed it. I was on assignment.
Sponsored by Papa John's, which means either the pizza was comped, or now we know where the Meta World Peace savings are going, which makes me hope that the carving station could come back in the media room this year. It's a little inside baseball, but as the payroll went up, the quality of the food went down.
Way down.
in the media room at Staples Center. And so it's like you could see what Shannon Brown's re-signing cost. And the answer was that season, the carving station. And given that they didn't win a title, Andy, I don't approve of that trade. I would have much rather had the carving station
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that if they had kept Dwight, we might be.
Given how much you're laughing at this joke already, I hope it's funny. Because this is terrible. You're beet red, and you can't speak the words.
Well,
this joke had better be good.
Because
you're not supposed to laugh at your own joke. You're crying. You're actually crying. This better be a really funny joke. Spit it out.
What really got me laughing wasn't even the punchline. It was that you were drinking water, and I was picturing it coming out of your nose if you started to laugh because you were
laughing. In anticipation of your joke being so funny?
No, but if you are drinking water, it's always more difficult to avoid it. We'd be eating gruel.
All that for drool?
You thought it was funny.
I mean, but again, better delivered, I might have.
Well,
point being,
somebody looking for me to deliver it better wouldn't have interrupted me. They would have let it go.
You were laughing so hard.
I was laughing so hard. But again, it was in part because of the water and the nose, and I was picturing something funny.
All right. So
yeah, we would have been eating gruel if they had kept Dwight.
So
this
I'm
year.
Hoping the savings are passed on, not necessarily the consumer, because I think we all know that's not going to happen.
Well, look, with those cheap ticket prices, how much more can you give Laker fans?
The other thing that was, I thought, kind of eye-catching was just this overall attitude that everybody had of the underdog thing and, you know, how there are low expectations on the team, Andy. I don't think there's any question that's the
12th,
consensus.
Brian.
And, you know, Kobe talking about being able, you know, being better than expectations, although at the same time he did reference Nick Young as somebody who could step into Meta World Peace's shoes as a defensive stopper on the perimeter. So I do wonder how much of this is just him just throwing shit at the wall and whatever, or if he actually believes it.
But yeah, he's never really seen Nick Young play D, including when they've been matched up against each other, so he doesn't have a reference point. He's just looking young, athletic. He probably assumes Nick Young can play defense. It's not like he's ever watched Nick Young play.
It was hard to tell if guys like Nash and Gasol and Kobe, who understand what you need to advance in the playoffs and win, really believe any of this. But either way, you know, and we see it a lot too, Andy, when we go through the comments and people tweet us and all that, there is kind of an excitement about being an underdog, like, you know, hey, let's get out there and surprise somebody. Yeah, I know you're a big Lakers fan. I mean, of the two of us, if people know, but maybe not everybody, you're the diehard true purple Laker fan. Do you like being an underdog, Andy?
No. No, I mean, first of all, I'm not an underdog. I'm not going out there and actually playing with these guys. So it's not like I'm watching this team since I consider myself a normal person. I'm not watching this team with a chip on my shoulder looking that I can prove something and shock the world. I don't really get anything from it. So no, the idea of being an underdog doesn't surprise me. They could maybe be a fun team to watch. You know, there's
something nice about exceeding expectations
That would be fun if they actually exceeded expectations. But no, I'm not fired up at the concept of being an underdog. And I'm going to go out there and prove that all these people that disrespected me, I'm going to prove them all wrong. I don't do a damn thing.
You don't care what the haters, if the haters hate, Andy? Because the haters are out there right now and they be hating. Let's make no mistake, Andy.
There is maybe nothing that I find more perplexing, just sort of as a generational shift or development, than this obsession over the haters and what people think about you and how you get fueled by the haters. And by the way, normal people now, you know, just everyday people on the street, think that they have haters and think that there are people looking to bring them down. I got news for you. People don't know jack about you and they don't care. But this notion of being fueled by doubt, I mean, I can get it a little bit if you are a world-class athlete. And
right, or like you actually play, if you play for the team.
Right, if you play for the team, sure. But generally speaking, we as a society spend far too much time giving a crap about what the haters think. It gives a shit.
There is, I think, some value. And it's L.A., and there will always be pressure. And this is not an insignificant throwaway season. A lot of what happens this season matters for them going forward. There's no question. But just, you know, like all this Jim and Jeannie stuff, the, you know, all these things where everybody can kind of learn to get along. Those two can figure out how to make it work in the front office. And, you know, the Lakers can get some guys in shape and make some decisions and see and watch players play without having to worry or pretend to worry about what this does for June and all that. What are we going to do about, you know, making this tight? I mean, all we do is win tight. Everybody take a deep breath, start over, and build again. I think there's something that is at least kind of healthy about it. You wouldn't root for it. As a fan, you want a title contending team every year. I get that. This is as they say, suboptimal. But I do think there's at least a little bit of upside for the franchise.
I disagree with your entire premise. I don't think that this is a pressure release season for the Lakers at all. To begin, it's a very critical season for the front office as they're trying to make impressions on their fans and also the rest of the league that they actually have their shit together in the first full season post Dr. Buss. And as you may have heard, this upcoming free agency
is an important one.
Is being
but
considered very important.
They've also, Mitch is, I mean, did it again on Wednesday, started, they've started chipping away at that and de-emphasizing
that, but they're smartly. I agree that it's smart. And you've heard me talk about how I think it's extremely important that they don't, you know, blow their entire cap on whoever they can get, no questions asked, so they look like they're making a splash. But they're still looking to lay that foundation, and that's important. And then in the meantime, you know, guys like Kobe and Nash and Powell, they ain't getting any younger, and each season carries that weight of importance and purpose for them. So it's not going to be pleasant for them playing 500-ish ball. And I think that the weight of that, feeling like they can't win, could get to
it. Could,
I
mean, I'm not, yeah, you're right.
What it was
could,
needed
it could
the
go
last
bad.
Couple years.
It could go bad.
What was needed the last couple of years wasn't a lack of expectations. It was fun. Because last year, we were told it was going to be fun. Sports Illustrated promised us fun on
Sons
the cover.
Of bitches. This is why magazines are dying.
Right.
Because they lie to you.
And that was a season that had expectations through the roof. But it was supposed to be fun.
Right, but it didn't turn out to be fun.
But my point is, though, it's not the expectations.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's what could coming from it. What I think is happening, Brian, is you, and I'm going to say, I understand where you're coming from. You are projecting what you need from the season as somebody who's been covering all this for years and years, and it's been such a grind. I get it, I think you're confusing your perspective with the franchise's
really,
perspective.
Really, and I think there's a point there. I think what it really is it's a reaction for me.
And how we feel about it, Brian, by the way, is much more important than how they feel about it.
I think
so. Again, I get where you're coming from.
It's not so much that. I think it's the reaction to the constant, we only play for rings. You know, any kind of losing or rebuilding is unacceptable. We don't rebuild, we reload. Cockamamie horse pucky. That is totally detached from any reality. And where I think it's healthy is just that this is a season. All that stuff you mentioned is completely true. Like I said, it's all relative, and this is not a throwaway season. There are a lot of important things happening. But I think just removing that one thing allows everyone to step back and just make decisions in a more rational way, to take on the season in just sort of a more rational way, to watch the season, if you're a fan, in a more rational way that I think can have some constructive benefits for them. It's all relative. One of the things that one of the interesting things and the upshots of where the Lakers are this year is that, Andy, there are some camp battles, positions, playing time. It's out there for the taking. Yeah, that's not always the case with
the
Lakers.
Mike D'Antoni said that right now, Steve Nash penned into the starting point guard spot. Pau Gasol penned into the starting center spot. Everything else, while Kobe's out, and who knows, maybe when Kobe's back, up for grabs.
You know, which of these teams is really?
Let's say they come out of the gate hot. do you tell Kobe?
Sorry, man, we're not interrupting this chemistry.
Well, hey, Kobe, how much do you care about getting that sixth ring?
Not that much.
No, he ain't taking a sixth ring where he was Adam
Morrison. Is there a positional kind of layout thing? Whether it's, you know, how you apportion minutes, whether it's, you know, who gets the starting three job or whatever. I'm assuming Kobe's not going to be on the floor for opening night. Is there anywhere in particular you're kind of looking to see how this stuff shakes out over the 8 preseason games?
I think it's going to be interesting to see how they divide up the minutes really between spots 1, 2, and 3, because Nick Young and Kobe are guys that I think are going to have to play a lot of small forward.
If there's going to be enough minutes going around.
Like, I think actually, and this is not from talking to Mike D'Antoni or anybody within the organization, it's just doing the math and thinking about the guys on the roster, because like you said earlier, relatively speaking, they have better guards than guys in the front court. I think they're going to have to play Kobe as the starting three.
Well, I think it makes a ton of sense.
In order to make the minutes go around. Plus, I think defensively, it will be easier for Kobe to blow off his assignment at the three than it will be at the two.
It's more damaging when he does it at the two.
No, but I mean, all joking aside, it will be easier for Kobe. And if you want Nash, Blake, Farmar, and Jody Meeks, who in this offense, the way they want to run, is a potentially important guy.
I don't think
guy.
He's going to play, but go ahead.
You actually think Meeks
really
is going to be out of the rotation?
I think what's going to happen is you have, so this is assuming Nick Young plays moderately well, if he doesn't do anything to just annoy the coaching staff so much they don't play him.
Which could be a coin flip.
It's possible. It's certainly possible. When Kobe comes back, and I think it's going to take about, you know, I think it'll be a few weeks into the season. He'll be back. When he does, and he's playing the three, now you have, you know, Farmar, Blake, Nash, and Young. Which
they're going to open with this sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
I just don't figure out
a way to make that joke.
They got to take a picture of all of them sitting on a couch. I don't see how, although Neil Young didn't play on that album.
No, he didn't.
I don't see how you add another guy to that rotation. I mean, because Meeks can't play the three and he doesn't do anything well, really, other than work really hard. Except shoot. And
Which they need.
But if Farmar and Blake shot the ball much better than Meeks did last year.
Right.
Farmar, over the course
of their careers, Meeks has been a more reliable three-point shooter. Definitely more so than Nick Young.
Definitely more so than Nick Young, but he can't put the ball on the floor Young.
He tries,
but he can't.
He should be fined every time he puts the ball on the floor. I think what you're going to have is the
real trick here is going to be, Blake is going to be, I think, the starting two on opening night. Just, again, Kobe's not playing. And Blake, I think, will start the year because he has that incumbency thing, and D'Antoni loves him. As that guy behind Nash, you know, if he chooses to start Young at the two and somebody else at the three, whatever it is. But Farmar is the guy with the most potential to really break out in D'Antoni's offense because he can play both one and two, and he can handle the ball and get to the basket in ways that Blake can't.
There's nobody on this team, I think, that has more potential to getting to the rim on a regular basis than Farmar.
Other than maybe Young. I mean, certainly among the three-point guards.
Doing it responsibly.
Okay, that's better. I mean, Farmar in his last season in the NBA averaged 2.2 shots at the rim per game.
It's very good.
Blake averages about 2.2 shots per week at the rim. 0.6 a game. And you know, and this is, and that was not a statistically fluky season for Blake. That was actually an explosion of rim activity. I feel like that in the end is what you're going to end him. So you'll have Young playing a lot of 2-3, you'll have Kobe playing a lot of 2-3, and they'll figure out ways to get those three guys on the floor. And the guy who will sit, because he didn't, certainly last year, unless he comes out and just shoots, you know, 45-50% from the floor or from three-point range, the guy who's going to sit is...
50%?
Blake shot 44% last year.
No, I understand that, but if Meeks doesn't...
65-70%.
Unless he makes every single one of his threes on the season.
To justify playing time, I think, over some of these other guys, he's going to have to shoot much better than them. And I think Farmar can shoot 40% you know, especially in this system. And I think Blake can shoot 40% again, you know. And Nash,
I think Blake is far more likely than Farmar, but we'll see.
Right, we'll see. Jordan, I mean, Jordan over the course of his career is closer to the mid 30s.
And
know,
by the way, too, he's not very good from mid range either. He's actually a pretty bad mid range.
Neither is
Meeks,
though.
I know. I'm just saying in terms of overall shooting, but it's fine.
But that's one that I'm looking forward
It'll
to.
It'll be interesting to see.
We got a good question from David Murphy, our friend. Who is one of the great writers over there at Foreign Blue and Gold. And
follow
also
him I believe it's at DaveM234.
Who was the most intriguing bubble player on the training camp roster to you? That was from Facebook, Kamenetsky Brothers. You can follow us there. You can like us there. Please do. Andy?
Assuming he can keep his head on straight and keep his, I guess, head out of a police blotter, I actually think Sean Williams is potentially very interesting for this team. A, he's got a history with Mike D'Antoni, and it was a good one. B,
Relatively speaking. He had the best season of his career, and it should be noted he averaged 7 points and 4 rebounds.
Right. Well, no, I mean, he's been a disappointment since entering the NBA on and off the court. But in theory, you know, he's got that history with Mike D'Antoni, and he fills some needs in that he's got defensive potential, and we've seen that season with Mike D'Antoni where he was really stroking it from behind the arc. If he can do those...
You said stroking it.
I don't know if from behind the arc is considered within your own home or if that's like pervy.
Doesn't matter.
But anyway.
You said stroking it. Meeks, wow. By the way, is a career 36.7% three-point shooter. So it's very possible that we all just picture him being better at it than he's ever really been. He's never shot 40% from the floor.
No, I understand.
Or from three-point range.
I understand
anyway,
that,
continue.
But, you know, Farmar's done it once.
One more time than Jody Meeks. But anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, but go ahead.
You know, Williams, I
think... Talk about stroking it.
Stroke man. Whatever happened to Billy Squire?
I can find out while you answer this question.
I do. Those guys, I think it was the guys at Laker Nation put out a great gif of... Billy Squire from the Rock Me Tonight video ripping open his tattered shirt. They said, this is what Dwight Howard is doing at this moment with free agency beginning. It was fantastic. But I think Sean Williams, in theory, has the ability to fill the most needs for this team. And again, it's a relatively speaking thing, but he's the most accomplished guy who's trying to make the team. So I find him the most intriguing.
He's probably got the most... diverse skill set.
Plus, his backstory is nothing if not interesting.
Yeah, not a terrible defender, by at least by reputation, and he's...
Well, for this team, he's freaking Bruce Bowen.
Right, you know, and he can hit the corner three, and he did that over 40%, I think, from each corner under
really
D'Antoni.
Stroking it.
And then things got blue. But... I'm curious about a guy like Marcus Landry, who's too old to be a prospect. He's 28 years old.
That's what they said about Roy Hobbs, Brian.
And he had one really good year. And it would be a shame if Marcus Landry's one really good year came this year when it's not going to do anyone that much good.
Or just culminate.
Except him, to get him a good contract.
Or just culminated in him getting shot.
You know, so, you know, there's a chance, you know, he's not going to be a guy who comes in and bursts on the scene and becomes a star or whatever. But, you know, he comes in, like Chris Copeland, becomes a useful NBA player like he did last year in his late 20s. And, you know... Elias Harris, guys like that. You know, I'm always curious about young players, but I agree with you. I think Williams is the most intriguing of all those guys.
Least intriguing to me, Brian, Eric Boateng. I don't even
know
who
that is.
I don't
think he counts. Well, he's from Arizona State. He played at Arizona State.
Brian,
he's a center.
Brian?
Yes?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I think of the guys that they brought in that people talk about, I am least intrigued by Xavier Henry. I have seen enough of him.
Plus, this team has too many guards, and he can't.
Yeah,
play
he's not going to make the team, and he can't shoot. Those are all of your Laker headlines and Laker news this week, which means, Andy, that it's time for
ACK.
Ask a Kamenetsky. We ask you to send us questions, both on Facebook, Kamenetsky Brothers, and Twitter at Cam Brothers. And once again, you have done that.
The first one, Brian, comes from at Great Corruptor Donald Snyder. Rooster sauce or wasabi?
By rooster sauce, of course, he's referring to sriracha, which is a delightful red chili paste.
With a rooster on the bottom.
Which I believe is made locally in L.A. It was invented and made locally in L.A. I could be wrong about that, but I believe
it. Hell yeah!
And that is not the reason why I think it is superior to wasabi, which I love. I love me some wasabi.
As do I.
It's a much more versatile sauce.
Yes,
you can
is.
Put it in a lot of different things. You can do more with it. And therefore, I think it is the superior spice flavoring.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you. I think wasabi, oddly enough, probably tastes better on its own.
But why are you eating either of them by themselves? They are condiments.
A, because I love spice. I mean, I love just shoving spice in my mouth. B, I'm kind of weird. We established before, I'll take a little pop of salad dressing or marinade every now and then. Delicious. Which is... which
marinade with a wasabi chaser.
Exactly.
Delicious.
All-time favorite hot sauce for you, Brian?
I don't know if I have one. I mean, I like hot sauce, but I'm not like you who like... stocks his shelves with 13 or 14 and swishes them around his mouth and has a little spit bucket for his hot sauce intake. I like hot sauce. I'm not a freak about it.
I would say I use Tabasco more than anything, and you know it's probably my go-to in a pinch.
It's always there. And then my go-to would be the Louisiana Red hot sauce.
Sure, but my favorite is Brother Brew Brew's African hot sauce. It's a brown sauce. Excellent, great combination of taste and heat. I typically find it in the farmer's market hot sauce shop, but I'm sure it's other places. Delicious if you're into that sort of thing.
Next question comes via Facebook. Jaime Alberto Flores. What more does Blake Griffin have to do to shed the, quote, all he does is dunk moniker among the media? Andy?
Well, it's interesting, actually. I was not at Media Day, Brian, because I was on assignment covering the King of the Rock event on Alcatraz in San Francisco for Red Bull. And Blake Griffin...
King of the Rock being a giant one-on-one tournament that they play at Alcatraz.
A lot of fun, actually.
Right. And the Rock... is Alcatraz.
The Rock.
And if you win, you're the king, therefore King of the Rock.
I said to myself, The Rock, so many times over and over, and it never got old because I was on the actual island. But Blake Griffin was there hosting because he's a Red Bull athlete, and I talked with him a little bit about, you know, what he's looking to improve, but also what he's expecting from the season. And I think this goes along the lines with the question being asked defensively.
The question being act.
Act! Defensively, he is asking the most from himself in terms of overall improvement. He feels like the time is there for him to really step up, both in terms of what the team needs, but also I think what he needs from himself to start getting more props as an overall player, being more of a complete player. But he also said, too, that the offense that Doc Rivers is looking to implement is going to be, relatively speaking, taking the ball more out of Chris Paul's hands a little bit, let him have a little more breather, let other guys handle the ball more, including Blake Griffin,
right,
who's looking to be a bit more facilitator. And by the way, I think he's a very underrated passer.
He's a very good passer, and you're right. I mean, I've read Doc was going to talking about that as well. Kind of having Griffin in that KG role where he moves the ball around, where he plays a lot of high post and things like that. But I think it comes down to, first of all, I don't think that reputation is quite as strong as it used to be.
But it's still there.
It's still there. He's got to show a little bit more elegance in the post. That would help him. And he's got to win. I think that's really what it comes down to. See, if they go out and they win and he shows some versatility, then that'll go away. Until he wins, and until he shows consistency in a mid-range game and an ability to work in the post in ways that don't look, at least, like they're relying totally on brute strength and athleticism, there'll at least be kind of lingering aspects of that to it. I mean, I don't think it's always fair.
But looking more complete, particularly on the defensive end, because that's, I think, often...
And stop flopping.
Would definitely help.
That would help.
Flopping. Last question, Brian, presented to us from both at Dustin Coleman and on Facebook, Richie Starr. Thoughts on the Breaking Bad series finale? What did you think of the Breaking Bad finale?
I liked it. I mean, I know it's... I will say this. It is almost impossible, I think, Andy, to get this sort of thing exactly right. I just think it is. I mean, it's so difficult to wrap a show that has been as plot-heavy as Breaking Bad has been as popular as Breaking Bad has been, and has gotten as much scrutiny as it started to get over the last, you know, two seasons, I would say, as people really start to appreciate how good a show it is.
Not guys like you and me, though, Brian.
No, we've been watching. We've been watching.
Damn right we were.
But overall, I thought it was good. I'd give it as a relative to the rest of the season, it was one of the lesser episodes this season. But this season's been incredible. As an episode of television, I'd give it a B. As a like kind of given the circumstances, I'd give it a B plus, A minus. I loved how quiet it was at the beginning,
which is an interesting approach.
Yeah, it was there was not a lot of activity, there was not a lot of dialogue. It was very soft and weighty in that regard, and you know it understood kind of there was a sense of finality to it. That, you know, Walter White was going to go out and this, you know, the when I leave the cabin and when I take the car out, if I can get it started, you know, praying, literally praying in the car when he's sitting there and the cop rolls by and he sees the lights, literally praying for just an opportunity to get back to New Mexico. I like that stuff. You know, I've seen the criticisms about the machine gun, and I've seen some criticisms about, you know, him wrapping things up too neatly.
And that really
for
me.
But I was okay with it.
Now, I did like it. I like you. I would probably give it like a B plus. I thought it was a good episode. There were some very good individual scenes. I liked where he tricked Elliot and Gretchen and the payoff with Skinny Pete and Badger.
Right, that was neat.
Who, by the way, I think are going to end up adopting Brock together in a very different version of My Two Dads. I think that would be phenomenal. I thought the dream sequence for Jesse before we, you know, saw
that
him,
was great.
That was terrific.
That was
and
great.
It was a great callback to him talking in that meeting about, you know, designing that box. I thought the scene between Walter and Skyler was really good. The little touches, like Todd's ringtone, you know, Lydia the Tattooed Lady. Yep. By the way, we learned from the show, because Todd also had for Walter White, She Blinded Me with Science as his ringtone. For a neo-Nazi who will kill a little kid or orphan a little kid to keep his basically slave labor going in the meth industry, Todd's kind of a music geek.
He is, and he's thoughtful. I mean,
he's very
polite. The introduction of Todd was one of my, you know, he not as a new character because he'd right. been there before, but really developed as a character in this last season was one of the better things that they did. I thought it was
well
a great
acted.
Character.
Although I noticed in the finale, and it never hit me before, he looks a lot like Rick Bucher.
A little bit, yeah. He looks a lot like Rick Bucher and Todd Marinovich.
I can see that as well.
Yeah.
I can see that as well. There were a lot of really
and
good
Chase
scenes.
Buttinger.
And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen, you know, a showrunner, show creator more than Vince Gilligan pay more attention and really have respect for the little things. You know, his eye for detail and his insistence on putting it in there is phenomenal. But I did think it was a little too neat. I mean, just in terms of plot structure, everything fell into place for Walter very easily, especially when you take into account that there was a manhunt out looking for him, you know, being able to go in and out of his house, you know, in and out of the coffee shop, get out of New Hampshire. I thought that was all a little too easy. And the wrapping, the way the loose ends were wrapped up, there was this relative optimism for, you know, the people that Walter has destroyed. And also Walter getting, I guess, that sort of peace of mind before he dies that I didn't really think fit.
Well,
from,
that's
from
the biggest question. Does he deserve it? Does Walter deserve to have things wrap up in a way?
The answer is clearly no.
Right. And so, you know, there's still plenty of destruction left in his wake. And while you can sort of project that, okay, Skylar's going to be a little better off now than she was, you know, I don't think the problems
but
end
here's
for
the
them.
Problem, though. Everybody ended up really suffering in the end that's still alive or still dealing with that carnage, except Walt, who dies having, again, that relative peace of mind that, considering how bleak and how dark the show is increasingly getting, I'm not sure it really fits.
That's fair. That's fair.
This is all through the context of thinking it still was a very good finale, and the show's phenomenal. And, you know, the idea that, you know, if the series finale doesn't live up to it, it somehow takes the show's overall quality down a few notches is horse crap. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, the show stands on its own merits and stands on them very well. It's an amazing show. And, you know, it's been a really, really interesting ride for all these characters. And, you know, it's been a pretty groundbreaking show. But I do think that the finale, relatively speaking, didn't quite live up to the rest of the show.
And a lot of people agree with you in that regard, certainly some of the specifics that you're mentioning. But anyway, finally, Andy, before we go, one really quick note. If you haven't seen it, go find it. You can. It's in a bunch of different places.
I tweeted it out.
@CamBrothers. Boston Celtics forward Brandon Bass is taking swimming lessons. He's 28 years old. He does not know how to swim, and he's taking swimming lessons. And there's a great couple great photos and a little great YouTube video of him in the pool, surrounded by not other adults learning to swim, but little kids. He joined the kid class, and he's taking swimming lessons with them. He's got a little boy who loves to swim. He has a vacation home with a pool, and he wants to be more comfortable with his son in the water and also promote swimming skills among inner-city youth. And there are a lot of kids who grow up in cities without access to pools.
Or just economic means.
Or the means to go to the community pool or whatever it is and learn to swim. Don't learn how. And good for him for going to do it and kind of putting himself out there in a place where people could make fun of him for taking swimming lessons with 5-year-olds.
I think it's terrific. I think that's really cool, like in terms of what it does for other people, but also really what it does for himself. You don't want to be an adult who doesn't know how to swim. I mean, it's not quite being an adult who doesn't know how to read, but swimming.
No, it's not quite that.
No, I'm saying, though, it's not
that. It's not quite that.
But I'm saying in terms of functionality as an adult and things that you may really, you know, need to do, and in the case of swimming, possibly save somebody's life, you need to know how to do that.
Particularly if you have kids. I mean, exactly. I mean, if you're an adult who doesn't have children and you don't know how to swim, you can kind of get by, and it's fine, and it's probably not going to impact your life that much. You're probably not near pools all that much. If you have children and you're an adult, you need to know how to swim. You just do, because your kid's going to want to get in the water, and you need to be able to get in the water with them safely and comfortably.
Is there anything for you, Brian, like a brand new skill that you've quite literally never done before that as an adult, if you had either the time or the means or whatever, you would love to
furniture making. I want to learn, like Jesse Pinkman. I want
and
to learn.
I want to do it while strapped, while strapped to a garage door opener.
If need be.
Inside a Nazi compound.
I want to the point where I actually, there's a woodworking class that a friend of mine told me about where you can go and you join this workshop and you get in there and they kind of give you access to all their tools.
Access!
But they teach you how to do stuff. And the first thing they teach you how to make is a cutting board. And you get in there and you sand it down and you use, like, I think they give you a lathe, Andy. They might give you a lathe to smooth that bad boy.
I don't even know what that is.
And I would, too, if I knew how to woodwork.
I just know they give you one.
I think so. But
is that like the sort of chisel thing that you use to smooth things out?
But it's not a, it's a, it's a,
but it looks
one
sort
piece
of like,
sort of
okay,
thing.
It
yes.
looks sort of like a chisel.
I believe, yeah, kind of. It's chisel adjacent, I
sure.
think.
Well, for somebody who doesn't know jack about woodworking like you or me, could we call it in the chisel family?
Yeah.
For chisel.
I want to know how to make things out of wood and construct things. I know you've made fun of me for my desire to be an architect and all of these other things.
Well, I mostly made fun of you because I've never heard you talk about it before.
I don't think you've been listening. But I want to make furniture.
For me,
I've always been admired that. I once met a guy who made a canoe.
Yeah.
He made a canoe, Andy.
No, I know.
That. I want to be the guy who can make a canoe.
That, especially now while you're looking for a job. There are people who pay big money for canoes. For me, it would be, I would love to be a world-class chef, but I'm not counting that because I can cook.
Right.
You know, not at that level, but I'm a good cook. I know what I'm doing.
We're both good amateur cooks.
Right, exactly. For me, it would be surfing. I always wanted to learn how to surf and actually had set myself up to be spending, it was my junior year of college. My best friend in school is a really good surfer. He's a lifelong surfer, grew up in Palos Verdes. And I was going to be spending that summer on break in LA taking summer school. And he and I had this plan where we were going to get up just about every morning early because he goes surfing anyway. And he was going to teach me how to surf. And it was something I always wanted to do. But then unfortunately, I had a skiing accident. I blew out my knee. And obviously, that summer I couldn't surf because I was doing physical therapy. And then from there, I never either found the time or made the time or whatever. But as I've gotten older, I've regretted it. It's something that I really wish that I knew how to do, that or play guitar. I would love to be able to play guitar or piano well, either one of those.
I have tried surfing and I was terrible at it, so I couldn't put that on my list. I play the guitar poorly.
Yes, you do.
And have forgotten how to play the piano.
You play the piano decent.
I used to. All right. So... obviously, lots to talk about upcoming. The Lakers start their preseason game schedule this weekend against Golden State. So we'll,
ain't that always the case?
Yeah, kind of. It's Golden State and it's Utah, and that's basically it, it seems like. So we'll see how these position battles start to play out. We'll see, Andy, if the Lakers can start to exceed expectations, at least until the real games begin.
Ironically, creating the pressure that you're trying to avoid this whole season.
We'll see if what happens if Mike D'Antoni's Lakers go 0-8 in the preseason. All of that.
The Lakers are going to hire Lane Kiffin.
All of it. He's available. He, like us, has time to make a canoe. All of that upcoming.
But damn it, he's got the means, and that's what pisses me off.
He doesn't need to build the canoe. He can buy one.
Exactly.
I can't afford a canoe either.
Jerk.
All of that upcoming in the next week or two, and we will see everybody next time.